There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 6, Eye of the Beholder. This was directed by Douglas Hayes, written by Rod Serling, produced by Buck Houghton, music by Marius Constant. In the cast were William D. Gordon, Jennifer Howard, Donna Douglas, and Maxine Stewart. Its original air date was November 11th, 1960. And you can watch this on Tubi TV, Pluto TV, Freevee TV, Paramount Plus, or the Blu-rays and DVDs. Again, if you have the ability, buy the Blu-rays just for the crispness and clearness of the picture and sound and the extras that come with it. Well worth the small sum that you'll pay for it. As always, there are spoilers ahead, so if you haven't seen this episode or you haven't seen it in so long that one of the Bushes or Reagan was president, then maybe put the pause on this podcast, go watch the episode, come back, and then listen to this episode of the podcast. And with that, let's get to the opening narration. Suspended in time and place for a moment, your introduction to Miss Janet Tyler, who lives in a very private world of darkness, a universe whose dimensions are the size, thickness, and length of a swath of bandages that cover her face. In a moment, we'll go back into this room, and also in a moment, we'll look under those bandages, keeping in mind, of course, that we're not to be surprised by what we see, because this isn't just a hospital, and this patient 307 is not just a woman. This happens to be the Twilight Zone, and Miss Janet Tyler, with you, is about to enter it. So we have, at least in my opinion, one of the better opening narrations to an episode that we've heard in quite some time. Opening one of the most prolific episodes of the series. This certainly is in a lot of people's top 5 or top 10. Certainly, it would be a top 10 for me. This is just one of those episodes that is a shining example of what true sci-fi, suspense, horror, anthology could and should be. You know, sometimes in this series, they get it wrong, and sometimes they get it exactly right, and sometimes it's somewhere in the middle. And this is one of those episodes that's about as far to the good right side of things that you can get. Certainly one of the most world-renowned and world-famous episodes. Certainly the benchmark of anyone that isn't necessarily a fan knows this episode, you know, so you can't really doubt or diminish its impact on the world of film and television, that people still refer to it as one of the best examples of the series and of the television at that time, even now, 64 years later. And I think that that speaks volumes. And this episode is, you could argue it's all about beauty, and you could argue that it's all about control, and it's all about conformity. Now, all of these words, beauty is not a dangerous word. Beauty is a good thing. We see beauty in our everyday lives, whether it be a beautiful sunset or a beautiful tree or a beautiful field or a beautiful car or a beautiful building or even a beautiful woman or a beautiful man. There are millions of aesthetically pleasing people, places, and things in this world, and we see them every day. We may not necessarily appreciate them every day, but we certainly see them every day. Now, is Rod Serling in this episode talking about the fact that Donna Douglas is an absolute beautiful woman? No, of course he isn't. I mean, not that she isn't. She is an absolute stunning stunning example of a very pretty, very aesthetically pleasing person. But, of course, being Mr. Serling, that's not what we're talking about, so to speak. Mark Twain defines beauty, or has an awesome quote, I think, that fits with this episode, where he says, "There are women who have an indefinable charm in their faces which makes them beautiful to their intimates. But a cold stranger who tried to reason the matter out and find this beauty would fail. One is apt to overestimate beauty when it is rare." And I think that aptly fits to this episode, for the idea of dealing with one aspect of it being the beauty part of it, because this episode is about beauty on its face. Now, again, as I said, spoilers ahead, so we're going to get the spoiler out of the way. This episode is about a woman who is undergoing a surgery for the 11th time, and if you listen to the dialogue, she's not actually undergoing a surgery. It's more of a series of injections and other minor fixes to make her into a beautiful person, make her into an aesthetically pleasing individual to the rest of society. Now, we obviously don't find out until the very end that she looks like Donna Douglas, but spoiler alert, here we go. She's had 11 surgeries. Or 11 procedures. They never actually really say surgery. It's always procedures. She's had 11 procedures, and all 11 fail, to where she winds up still looking like herself, or at least we assume she still looks like herself, for the fact that we never saw her before or after any of the other 11 or other 10 procedures that she's had, so we don't know what she looked like. She could look like Danny DeVito before they started this process, and she winds up looking like Donna Douglas by number 11. We don't know. We're just going to assume that Miss Janet Tyler looked like Miss Janet Tyler from day one to procedure number 11. With that being said, she's had 11 procedures to be aesthetically pleasing enough to be quote-unquote conformed to live in the quote-unquote normal society. And as we see at the end of the episode, the procedures didn't work, and she still looks like the completely beautiful and very aesthetically pleasing Donna Douglas. Now, we also find out at the end that she doesn't look like everyone else, because everyone else looks like a morph between swine and man. So you have these doctors and these nurses with these pig-like features, these pig-like faces, and Janet Tyler looks like Donna Douglas. And 11 procedures, as we find out, is the most that the state will allow for a person who isn't quote-unquote normal-looking or aesthetically pleasing to the rest of society to have before they have to ship her off to essentially an internment camp for the uglies. And the uglies, of course, being the very aesthetically pleasing Donna Douglas. Now, this is set in a, you don't really want to say the word dystopian, because for some people, I mean, some people, it conjures up ideas of what the world looked like after the atomic bomb went off in the episode Time Enough at Last. Or, if we jump further ahead to season 5, The Old Man in the Cave, you know, you're looking at a society that is 10 years past a nuclear war, where basically things have gone back to the Old West days. And so you don't really, I hate to use the word dystopian simply for that connotation, because to me, I mean, you could say dystopian is also basically anything Charles Dickens ever wrote. You know what I mean? You could argue that, you know, David Copperfield was in dystopian times, probably, for that matter. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about, this is essentially supposed to be set either in the present or the near future, or in the future. We don't really know, but we get the idea through the actions and words of the people that the state is all-powerful, and the people have to conform to their laws and mores and rules of society in general, lest they be sent away. And this is the situation that Miss Donna Douglas finds herself in. Now, 11 procedures down, 11 procedures failed, and she winds up having to go live with people that look like her. So we go through this entire episode where all the doctors and all the nurses' faces, and even Miss Tyler's face, are all hidden, either by bandages, in the case of Janet Tyler, or by some of the best lighting and blocking, to use a theater term, some of the best lighting and blocking I've ever seen on any television show, much less The Twilight Zone or any other show, especially from 64 years prior, that we don't actually see their faces until the end reveal, when you see Miss Tyler's face and then you see all the people that look like pigs, and we get the reveal that, you know, in this society, pig people are the norm, and people like Janet Tyler are in fact the abnormal. And then when we realize that they failed in the procedure, they call in one of the leaders of the quote-unquote camp or community that she has to go live with, and of course this man that walks in, whose name is Edison Stroll, is of course an aesthetically pleasing man who is there to shuttle her away to go live with all the other uglies in society that no one in the pig people walking around in the world community want to look at when they're going to Bed Bath and Beyond, you know, to buy, you know, cookware or pillows. They don't want to look at someone like Donna Douglas or Edison Stroll. So, of course, the big reveal is the normal people are ugly, and the abnormal people are aesthetically beautiful, at least in our own society, as you could call it today, or even 64 years ago. Now, it's funny that during the episode, even the doctor who performed the 11 procedures on Miss Tyler even has his moments of doubts where, you know, why can't everyone just live together, and why do we have to do all this and then still send these people away? Why can't we just all get along, in the words of Rodney King? Why can't we all just get along? But we can't, and we never have. And sadly, spoiler alert, we probably never will. Now, you could look at this, you could look at this several ways, and we will here shortly. But you look at it in this episode, the idea that the normal is hideous and the abnormal is pleasing. So at the very end, Miss Janet Tyler's bandages are unwrapped in one of the better scenes of the entire series and in TV in general, especially of the time, to realize that she is still very much beautiful and very much abnormal. So they call in the community leaders, or one of the community leaders or spokesmen, to come gather up Miss Tyler and take her to the camps or the community or what have you, so that she could live her life in relative ugliness away from the beautiful people that look like pigs in society. And with that, we will get to our closing narration. Now there, questions come to mind. Where is this place? And when is it? What kind of world where ugliness is the norm and beauty the deviation from that norm? You want an answer? The answer is, it doesn't make any difference. Because the old saying happens to be true. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. In this year, or 100 years hence, on this planet, or wherever there is human life, perhaps out amongst the stars. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Lesson to be learned in the Twilight Zone. So, ugly is the norm, beauty is the abnormal. There's so much to be said about this episode. There's so many layers you could dig into. We won't go into too much on it. But to say that you could look at this several different ways. You could look at this as a take on communism, which it certainly could be. Especially during this time, we were chest deep in the Cold War, and nuclear threats and, you know, atomic bomb scares and this whole thing. At this time, you know, people, this was a real fear and a real perceived possibility. Although we know now that nothing came to pass, as far as no nuclear weapons were ever dropped on American soil by any of our enemies, and the same with us past 1945. So all of that never happened, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't a daily, real, and tangible fear of that. So you could argue that. You could argue that this state, quote-unquote, is the communist government. And this state, quote-unquote, will be seen again in the episode The Obsolete Man with Burgess Meredith. We will see this whole thing play out again in that episode. We will also see what I always kind of consider a sister episode to this episode in the episode coming up. I believe it's season 5. Number 12, Looks Just Like You. And we'll get there in due time. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about this. We're talking about a state entity having control over what is beautiful, what it isn't, what is normal, what is abnormal. Now, we're even seeing this to a point in today's society in Japan with their social points, so to speak. And if you haven't seen that, take you some time and look it up and read a little bit about that. It's some shocking stuff. It's some weird and wild and interesting stuff. You know. But we're not talking about that. Although you could definitely correlate. But we're talking about this episode where beauty is abnormal and ugliness is normal. Now, you could correlate this even to today with Instagram and all these other people that are influencers. They make normal, quote-unquote, women who are beautiful feel like bridge trolls because they don't look like a Kardashian or, you know, any of these Hollywood people that, you know, have professional people taking care of them to look their best, and that they're also blessed by genetics. But society and these companies and all these other people trying to make money on these women have convinced these women that they all look like bridge trolls, even when they don't. They don't. But that doesn't stop people from, and the influencers, all these other people, the social media influencers and all these people are making money off of women thinking that they're ugly because society, and I'm not blaming men, I'm not blaming women, I'm not blaming, you know, we're not going to have any sort of argument about the patriarchy or anything like this. I'm talking about just in general, women, at least a lot of the ones I know, and I'm not speaking for all women, obviously. A lot of them have inferior feelings about themselves and about how they look just by the fact that you have these people that have won the genetic lottery, one, but also have enhanced all their beauty features where they're supposed to be setting the trend for what is the quote-unquote normal or what you should look like. And it's not right, but then you have women and even men to a point trying to live up to these standards, and it's impossible. And all the while, the people that are trying to set the standards are the ones cashing the checks. So you could argue that with this episode, that, you know, it's a bad thing. And that's why I like Mark Twain's quote that I quoted earlier in the episode, to kind of get a different perspective, because that's the whole idea, is that you want to get a different perspective on this episode and on any episode and on what it means. And I mean, certainly Rod Serling didn't write this episode as simply a tale of beauty and ugliness. We know he didn't. If you know anything about his writing or him in general, his writing was allegorical and very heavy laden with themes and different purposes other than just telling a story. And this is certainly one of them that I think shines brightly. So this isn't about ugly or pretty. It could be about communism. It could be about the beauty industry in general. Basically influencing these women to think that they're inferior so that they buy their products and they laugh all the way to the bank, knowing good and well that their products really aren't going to do much good. But people always like to hope, and people always like to grasp at anything they think can help. even when it may not. So, with that, let's get to the bios. Now, this episode was directed by Douglas Hayes. We talked about Douglas Hayes all the way in the beginning of season one, when I talked about his biography in the season one, episode 11, and When the Sky Was Opened. So if you want to actually listen to me talk about him a little more in depth, go listen to that episode. But he directed some of, as I also discussed last week during The Howling Man, some of the most prolific episodes of The Twilight Zone, like When the Sky Was Opened, or The After Hours, or The Howling Man, or this episode, or Dust, or The Invaders. All of them have, all of those episodes have places in people's top fives, top tens, top 20s. So he knows his way around directing an episode of The Twilight Zone for sure. And I would argue that either this episode or The Howling Man were his best directing efforts. As far as cinematography, as far as the mood and the feel of the episode, I think that this was as good as it gets for Mr. Hayes for this television show that he directed several episodes of. You're, in my mind, and in my opinion, and since this is my podcast, I will state my opinion. In my opinion, this is his best episode. And in a lot of people's opinions, I would think it is his best episode. So if you want to hear more about Douglas Hayes, go back to my season 1, episode 11, and When the Sky Was Opened to hear more about him. But he was a great director. As we've seen with this episode, he was a great director. So with that, let's move on to the man who played the Doctor, William D. Gordon. William D. Gordon was born in 1918 and passed away at the age of 73 in 1991. So he's been gone away for some time now. He does have approximately 48 total IMDb credits, although only 17 of them were acting. So he didn't have a whole lot of acting. He did have a lot of writing and a few directing credits, but for acting, he started out his acting in a 1958 episode of Cimarron City, followed by Maverick, Peter Gunn, Riverboat, stop me if you've heard this, Rawhide. Of course, he was in two episodes of The Twilight Zone. We saw him just a few episodes back with Nervous Man in a $4 Room, where he played George. You know that because you'd heard his name 872 times in the run of the episode. But he was Law of the Plainsman, Black Saddle, Rawhide, like I said, The Americans, Thriller, The Virginian, Captains and Kings, and his last on-screen appearance as an actor was in a 1986 episode of Hunter, starring, of course, Fred Dreyer. If you remember that television show, I used to love it as a kid. I haven't seen it since then, so I can't speak as to whether it held up or not. I find that a lot usually don't. Now, as far as writing, he wrote a number of episodes of The Fugitive, the Richard Boone Show, Kraft Suspense Theater. He wrote six teleplays for the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. He wrote one episode, an adapted one episode of Thriller, which was hosted by Boris Karloff. He wrote on Bonanza, The $6 Million Man, Ironside, Barbary Coast, and his last writing credits were from the television series Chips in the 70s and early 80s. Now, he was born in Santa Clarita, and he, like I said, was a writer as well as a producer as well as an actor. Not much is known about him other than his on-screen and off-screen in the business life. So no one knows how he died other than just when he died, and no one knows much of his personal life beyond that. But I will say I did enjoy him in Nervous Man in $4 Room and as the doctor in this episode. Now, Jennifer Howard played the nurse to Miss Tyler, and she was born in 1925 in New York City and passed away in 1993 at the age of 68. Now, William D. Gordon didn't have a whole lot on his IMDb, and neither does Miss Jennifer Howard. She only has 15 actual acting credits to her name on her IMDb, and she started it with a 1948 episode of Actors Studio, going into Cheyenne, Suspicion. She was on one episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. She was in an episode of The Thin Man, episode of Playhouse, two episodes of Playhouse 90, one episode of The Twilight Zone. She was in the movie Return to Peyton Place, The House of Women, The Chapman Report, and she finished out her acting career in five episodes of Perry Mason between 1957 and 1966. She was previously married to Samuel Goldwyn Jr. of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and of that family dynasty. And she died in Los Angeles, California. So again, not a lot is known about her beyond that, other than much, you know, we don't really know much of her personal life, so we can't really delve too much further into that. And so with that, let's get on to the woman who would be Janet Tyler, and that would be Miss Donna Douglas. Now, Donna Douglas was born in 1932 and passed away at the age of 82, just a scant 8 years ago in 2015. Now, she has 44 acting credits on her IMDb, so we'll run through them somewhat quick. She started out on an episode of, or playing a small part as a billboard girl in one season of the Steve Allen Plymouth Show. She was also in the movie North by Northwest, uncredited of course, Tightrope, Beacon Street, U.S. Marshal, Little Abner, Whirly Birds. She was in one episode of Ozzie and Harriet. She was in Lockup, The Detectives, Route 66, Thriller, Michael Shane, 77 Sunset Strip, Surfside 6, Dr. Kildare, The Jack Benny Program, Mr. Ed, The Joey Bishop Show. She was in two episodes of The Twilight Zone, of course, Eye of the Beholder, And season 3's Cavender is coming, which I can actually wait to get to that episode. And you'll know why when we get there. She was also in The Defenders, Frankie and Johnny. And then, of course, she was also in Night Gallery, also by Rod Serling. But everyone knows her, of course, by playing Ellie Mae Clampett on The Beverly Hillbillies, which, of course, was killed off in 1971 due to what they call the quote-unquote rural purge of television shows, which is why stuff like Green Acres, Mayberry RFD, The Beverly Hillbillies, why those were all canceled. The networks wanted to get away from rural set television shows and go more into urban shows. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, because we wound up with All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Barney Miller. I mean, there were a lot of great TV shows that came on after that that were more of an urban-themed situation comedy. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't have liked to have seen a little more Green Acres. You know what I mean? It wouldn't have hurt my feelings, let's just say. She also went on to work after being Ellie Mae Clampett in a few different television programs, such as Adam 12, and of course the movie Return of the Beverly Hillbillies. And her last on-screen appearance was in a short film, The Chronicles of Little Starfish. And then she passed away in 2015. So she was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and she loved animals. She was married soon after high school, had a son, and divorced. She then went on to win a couple of beauty contests, all within the span of a few years, moved to New York, and soon started appearing on television series, including The Twilight Zone. And then she got the role on Beverly Hillbillies, and that just catapulted her career. And, of course, everyone knew who she was after that. And she then, like we said, went on to be in other television shows and a few movies, and passed away in 2015 at the age of 82. But now let's talk about the other Janet Tyler. Now, what are you talking about, Bill? There was only one Janet Tyler. It was the woman in the bandages. Well, everybody knows that, and everybody knows it was Donna Douglas, but it wasn't Donna Douglas in the bandages. Well, who was it, Bill? Well, that's a good question. It was Maxine Stewart. Now, who? Maxine Stewart. She was born in 1918 in New Jersey and passed away at the age of 94 in 2013. Now, what are you saying? There's two Janet Tylers, Bill. There was only one, and it was Donna Douglas. No, there were actually two. There was Miss Maxine Stewart, who was Janet Tyler under the bandages. And then there was Donna Douglas, who was Janet Tyler when they took the bandages off. If you'll notice, the voices are not the same. It's two different women. They liked Maxine Stewart's voice better, but they wanted Donna Douglas as the woman who was to be revealed to be the pretty, abnormal person under the bandages. So, funnily enough, even in The Twilight Zone, even on this episode, they went with the prettier model versus Maxine Stewart, but kept her for her voice and acting ability, because apparently there was also some talk that Donna Douglas wasn't quite right for the part, of having enough acting range to really play the desperate and despaired woman that had to be played under the bandages. So they went with Maxine Stewart under the bandages and Donna Douglas outside of the bandages. So that will do it. And now, and as Paul Harvey would say, now you know the rest of the story. Well, that's the rest of the story. They used two different actresses to play the same woman, one in bandages, one outside of bandages. So with that, let's get to the trivia of the episode. Now, the director had planned to have Maxine Stewart, who spoke all the lines of the main character, Janet Tyler, when her head is entirely covered by bandages, dub in the single line spoken by Tyler when she is revealed and portrayed by Donna Douglas. However, Douglas had been listening to Tyler's voice as she recorded her part and was able to imitate her so successfully that she was allowed to speak the line on camera herself. Now, the leader, when you see him on the television screen in the hospital, the leader's hand movements were meant to resemble gestures made often during speeches by Adolf Hitler. And again, we could, as we talked about earlier with the communism aspect, you could also correlate this to be relatory to the Holocaust, where the abnormal people, i.e. the Jewish people, were said not to be fit for quote-unquote society that Hitler wanted, and so they sent them off to camps to live quote-unquote among their own kind in their own community. Of course, we saw how that turned out. Not great, if you remember your history. So you could correlate that as well. I kind of tried to stay away from that, just because that's just literally one of the darkest parts of world history, at least in the last 100 years. So I you know, we'll talk enough about it in future episodes of the Twilight Zone, and those of you who are Twilight Zone fanatics know exactly what I'm talking about, but we'll get there when we get there. This was one of the highest rated episodes of the original Twilight Zone series, with a 9.1 rating on IMDb. Originally, the preceded the title, until television producer Stuart Reynolds threatened to sue Rod Serling for the use of the name, because at that time he was selling an educational film of the same name to public schools. Reruns following the initial broadcast featured the title screen, The Private World of Darkness. Because CBS consulted different prints over the years of syndication packages, the closing credits vary from side to side depending on what TV station is used for what version, and this made a complicated job for the filmmakers. In the Twilight Zone's original DVD release, the syndicated version was marketed as an quote-unquote alternate version. No character's face is clearly shown for the first 19 minutes of the episode. The famous episode is referenced in Futurama, Season 3, Episode 11, The Cyber House Rules, with a shot-for-shot recreation of the big reveal recreated when Leela's bandages are taken off. And if you don't know about Futurama, you should make the time. That is literally one of the best animated shows that's ever been created, along with King of the Hill and The Simpsons, but we all know about those, I'm sure. The episode features two actors who would later appear in hit TV series. Donna Douglas was Ellie Mae Clampett in The Beverly Hillbillies, and Edison Stroll was Virgil Edwards in McHale's Navy. And Edison Stroll also appeared on another Twilight Zone episode dealing with body transformation, The Trade-Ins, where he was the youthful body of an elderly man that the elderly man sought to attain. So we will get to that, of course, when we get to that. So let's move on to the goofs of the episode. At the beginning, A nurse walks into Janet's room after her face, and her face visibly does not have the pig-like features. This is against the norm of this fictitious world, and contrary to the revelation, that everybody had disfigured faces. The nurse in question is behind a dimly lit gauze-like screen. Periodic freeze frames and zooming in on the actress's head shows a vague and interrupted pig-like face. The actress is indeed wearing the makeup of the normals. So, you know, that's a little nitpicky, but, you know, it is what it is. Before the post-operation surgery is revealed, one of the doctor's faces, even though it's still in the shadows, is noticeable. And upon viewing this episode this week in preparation for this podcast, I did notice that. But then again, people in 1960... we're looking at this episode on a 13-inch black and white television, maybe color, but it was still in black and white regardless. Not a 65-inch high-def TV, 4K, what have you, that people today are looking at. So yeah, if you look hard enough, you can see the pig-like features on the doctor's face. But, you know, is that a goof? Well, no, because back then, and even up until probably 20 years ago, you'd have never saw that. So, you know, it is what it is. And then, lastly, at the end, when the doctor is unwrapping the bandages, the view from Janet Tyler's view, her point of view, is different. Is the bandages are coming off in a different direction than the way the doctor is undoing them. Clockwise from her view and counterclockwise from the doctor's view. Now, let's move on to likes and dislikes of this episode. Well, I like this episode. I love this episode. It's, to me, one of the better ones that's been created. And I think listening to this last, 30 minutes of me jabbering on about this, you know that I love this episode. It's a great episode. Certainly one of the top 5, if not the top 10 episodes of the series. I love the cinematography, I love the lighting, the way they shot it, the way they did everything, hiding the people's faces, even Janet's, under the gauze, until the last bit of the show, where we finally see everybody's faces, and everybody is, you know, ugly or abnormal, or they look like pigs. And it's one of the best reveals, one of the best twist endings of a television series, especially at that time, and even in a lot of times going forward since then, that was done on television. Now, for dislikes, you could argue several different things, I suppose. I don't really have a whole lot of dislikes of this episode. I mean, the acting is okay. It's not great. But, I mean, then again, you've got people that are running around in pig masks. How can you fully emote feelings when you're in a pig mask? You know, that'd be like, you know, like looking at Star Wars and saying, oh, that sand creature is sad. How would you know? You know what I mean? It's a sand creature. It has the same face. You know what I mean? I mean, it's you lose a little of acting ability or ability to act better for the huge reveal that, you know, they're all pigs. You know, not saying that's a bad thing necessarily, but it's a give and a take, of course. So, let's move on to casting. Now, for the doctor, I would go with Topher Grace. I think he would do pretty good at that. And, you know, he's actually a decent actor if you get past that 70s show. If you've seen him in everything, in anything besides that, you'll know what I mean. Now, for the nurse, I would go with Caitlin Olson, just because I want to see her do something other than It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I think she would be great in it. And then for Janet Tyler, I would go with Annie Murphy. Now, Annie Murphy, if you don't know who she is, she was on an episode of Black Mirror this previous season, and she was also, she also played in the television show Schitt's Creek as Alexis Rose. She's actually a really good actress. I think she would do really good at this. And then just for fun, big man, you know, big actor in a small role for the representative of the abnormal community to come get Annie Murphy's Janet Tyler, we'll put Bradley Cooper in that role because that would just be funny to me. Anyway, I think it'd be great to see. All right, and then lastly but not leastly, the moral and philosophy of this episode. Well, I think we've pretty much covered that, haven't we? You could look at it from an influencer slash beauty industry sort of slant. You could look at it as a communism, an attack on communism sort of slant. Or you could look at it even as a allegory of the Holocaust. And either way, I don't think you could be wrong. And certainly, I'm not the end-all be-all of this. If you have any thoughts on this episode or previous episodes or future episodes, or if I'm even wrong or right about the Holocaust or the communism, write me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. So, I really do think that it's open to interpretation for anyone to have any sort of idea, and I welcome all those ideas. So let me know what you think. DimensionsTZPodcast@gmail.com. And with that, I think we'll bring this episode safely in for a landing. Thank you all for listening. I really do appreciate it. More than you know, for sure. And stay tuned for next week's episode, where we see William Shatner being very William Shatner, as he is stuck, as so many people have been, in Ohio. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a good night.